Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Shelfstall. I'm calling in from Pompano Beach, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. Before we get started with the show, I'd like to tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. We educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Excuse me. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Here at NASCA, we're fighting for kids and we're serving adult survivors. Be aware, be a voice, be a hero, be brave. Tonight's show is an open mic show. It's a question and answer forum. And if you'd like to participate, we'd love to have you call in. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And we've got a little bit of background noise. The guest speaker is Pastor Deborah. I know I chopped her name up last time. Pastor Deborah.
That's Chalene. Okay.
Okay. Say your last name.
Deborah Shalek.
Dr. Shalek. Dr. Deb Shalek. Okay.
Pastor,
and she grew
Dr.
up
Deb,
all over the world. Dr. Deb. And Dr. Deb grew up all over the world in a military family where her mother was mentally ill, and she is in Pensacola, Florida, and she's trained in ministry, mental health, working, and substance abuse. And if I'm understanding, let me get to the part right here. I read it earlier. She teaches that humans have three parts, being of spirit, soul, and physical body. So welcome, Dr. Deb. Thank you for calling in. Before we get started, we have two people who have called in, and I'd like to introduce them as well. And the first one is calling in from Tennessee, and her name's Janet. Good evening, Janet. How are you?
I'm fair to Midland. How about y'all? That is
I'm
the time we use
fair
here.
Midland
fair to Midland.
Fair to Midland. I'm a Southern girl, so I understood exactly what you were saying. So, well, thank you for being here, Janet, which is calling in from
thank
Tennessee,
you.
Memphis, Tennessee, right?
No, I'm from Plaxton, Tennessee. That's about an hour south of Nashville.
Nashville. Okay, I've been to Murfreesboro,
yeah,
so I guess. Okay, cool beans. Well, thank you for being here. We also
thank
have
you.
Deborah, who was called in from Arizona. Good evening, Deborah. How are you?
Oh, doing great, and so glad to be here, as always. And I love the whole East Coast verbiage that you guys use, because I'm from the West Coast, so we say things like brock. It's not the
same
thing.
Yeah, I don't
think
very Midland.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's so cute. I'd love to hear it. So, but I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be your co-host tonight. And Pastor Deborah, so thankful that you are here. Thank you so much.
Awesome, Sauce. We got into a really good discussion last time Dr. Deb was on, I believe. I don't know if it was the last time, but I do know that I hosted with Dr. Deb before, and we got into some very, very interesting discussions. And like I said, Dr. Deb believes that we are of three parts. Ooh, we've got a little bit of background noise. Of spirit, being of spirit, soul, and physical body, and believes that all are important. So that's pretty awesome. So do we have any questions to get us started with Dr. Deb? If not, Dr. Deb, what you can do is, if you wanted to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, that would be pretty awesome, and then that may generate some questions. And I'm going to put a little posting on Facebook to see if we can get some more folks to call in. So, Dr. Deb, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you. I had been a person my whole life who cared about people. And, I don't know, 40 years ago, you went and became a counselor. So I went and got a master's degree and then got a license in the state of Florida as a mental health center counselor, then was nationally certified and proceeded to help people. And I was in private practice. I was in hospitals, nursing homes, in rehabilitation hospitals, working with head injuries, counseling, working with social workers, psychiatrists, every kind of doctor. And I thought I was doing okay. But there was always something in me and that I wanted to help through some other means. And so slowly I put that down and I picked up learning how to help people from a spiritual standpoint. I had to learn how to be a pastor and be a chaplain in a hospital and do the emergency room, deal with people who die or dying, praying with them in the hospital, working alongside the doctors, nurses, suicide, everything. Then I had to learn how to pray with people, and I had to learn how to talk and preach and give sermons, and then went into the jail. So I did that and just studied and read. And always wanting to help people. And then I got thrown in very early with some of the very hardest kinds of people to help spiritually. And those you might look at coming from cults, the different, very hardcore stuff. And I didn't know anything about it, so I had to study some more. And I had to learn very quickly. And I had to read 6 books at one time, be in church a lot. Became a minister with the Assemblies of God and proceeded down that path. And what happened was, because I got called to work with some very serious people who had a lot of very serious and deep abuse issues, the church at that time didn't know how to handle them, didn't know what to do with them, and they were basically, the pastors didn't have a lot of training. And they were told to basically refer them to a psychiatrist or a Christian counselor. So we did that. And because these were heavy-duty issues, multiple personalities, post-traumatic stress disorder, child abuse, ritual abuse in religions, suicide, child pornography, human trafficking. And most pastors did not even have basic mental health counseling at the time, or
information. So they got referred out, and so I just had to study and read, and just over time, kind of came where I'm at. And I now volunteer back at the Berry Mental Health Center. I go in once a week and do a couple-hour spiritual care group with the acute crisis people who either come there by their own police emergency rooms and talk to them about three parts that they need to work with the psychiatrist or counselor. So it's all important. That's all vital parts. And they need to reconnect spiritually, because they have found out through the 12 steps programs that by reconnecting to a higher power, whatever you determine that to be, adds support. And if there's people that are in that, they add support and fellowship. And you need that when you're trying to recover and get through whatever you're getting through. Does that help? Any questions so far?
Yeah, absolutely. That gets us started. Any questions from Deborah or Janet?
Well, yeah, this is Deborah. There's a book that I have been reading, and it is this book is by Byron Katie, and she has a very good statement in here. And she says, when you begin to notice your thoughts, and one of the first things you'll see is that you're never alone. You're not alone, even though you feel you're alone or you're loved, even when you're with someone else. You're not even alone when you're with yourself. I would love to hear your thoughts in regards to those comments, because that is a huge statement to make. That is huge for me. I don't know how you feel about it, so I'd love to hear it.
Okay. I don't know if a lot of you have read like John Bradshaw or some of these other people. John Bradshaw believed that there was an inner child, and that was in there. It needed to be healed. It was a part of you. It had been hurt, and it was there crying a lot of times. And there's a lot in the mental health world. They do believe that there are people hear voices. They do believe if the trauma is so great, you will form disassociate, as they might call it, and form multiple personalities, and which were different parts of you that would go through the trauma. Some great, wonderful movies out there, Three Faces of Eve with Joanne Woodward, true story. Sybil, yeah. True story.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other cases of that. And now, is that what they're talking about, that, or are they talking about the inner child? Sometimes you have to explore with the writers what they mean by that. And so it's hard to say, but in the mental health world, that is, they have tests that they will take somebody to see if they, on the spectrum of post-traumatic stress, if they end up at the far end with multiple personalities. And so the writer would have to explain a little bit more what she means by that.
I love where you're going with the post-traumatic stress. So, you know, a lot of our listeners don't quite understand where the post-traumatic stress actually derives from. And how how it's actually defined. Let's just use the word defined. And I hope maybe you could help us define the post-traumatic stress syndrome, if you could.
Okay. We'll break it down in three words. The word post means after something's happened, and it's already, the thing has already happened. Post means later. Traumatic in the mental health world and the spiritual care world, it could mean several different things. In the spiritual care world, they say we have a set of morals or guidelines or something in us. And when we are forced to go against that, we have a moral injury. And that's traumatic. And they talk a lot about soldiers. Our Barry, if you believe this, our nature is not to kill things. So soldiers have to almost be disassociated in order to kill another human being. And if in the right circumstance, when they leave the military and they're away from that sort of, little framework that they're in where it's okay, then the reality sets in that, whoops, and it almost goes against it spiritually, the very spirit of life that's in you to kill something. And so in post-traumatic, whatever is considered traumatic, okay, you could have a limb cut off, shark eat you, traumatic. You could have a car wreck, near death, emotional trauma. So then the stress part, okay, post-traumatic, so something's happened, and in mental health what they believe is when that event occurs, and if it reoccurs over and over, that in your biological brain, chemicals are released and memories are sort of set. And it's a chemical thing up there. So when then, okay, the trauma has passed and you're just not really paying much, but when stress or emotion, usually they're talking some kind of emotional stress, you think something, memories get brought back just like you're living it, and you're going through it all again. Okay? So that in the mental health world, because they're looking biologically, what is going on? How are these memories stored? Now, on the testing, what they do for a psychologist, he'll take you in, ask you a lot of questions. And they have a scale, like we'll say from 0 to 10. And based on your answers to the questions, which I had a young lady living with me who had multiple personalities due to satanic ritual abuse when she was young. Now, she goes in, and her multiple personality parts, their job is to protect the system. So she got in with a psychologist who was trained, and they weren't going to give the right answers. So when she finished, she did not get the diagnosis for the insurance company to pay for multiple personalities. She got post-traumatic stress, maybe below a 5, you know, on a scale of 10. Because the system, if you have those personalities, which are defense mechanisms, and you'll see that if you watch The Three Faces of Eve, okay? And what happens is that system protects itself. So she went in and took the test, but the little parts that were in them, we'll call them inner children or whatever, they were not going to expose this. So they can take the test, somebody else takes the test. As you saw in The Three Faces of Eve, you can have an Eve white and an Eve black, and then the Jane shows up. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when we get under stress, now the events are past, and something happens that emotionally upsets us, could be some, who knows what. It's like an automatic switch happens, the chemicals get released, and we're right back in the traumatic event with all the feelings.
I think that's so important, that what you just said, like that the emotions get released. Because the moment you think you're done with feeling these emotions, and then something happens and it comes back out, and you're like, oh crap, I was hiding this for forever. Like I was hiding this. And then you have to address it again. So how do you readdress that? Because you're going to have to readdress this. This is a readdressing. How would you do that?
They're doing some testing now with some vets about this. They actually have this new research, because what they believe is when you have an emotion or a thought, chemicals in your biological brain get released. And your biological brain responds to those chemicals. And they also know that cortisol is released from the top of the kidneys when you're under stress. So the researchers are saying this is really the emotions of something happening re-releases all these chemicals that have the memories. So they have this research now, if they put some kind of something chemical into the brain that will stop that release of the hormones, the release of the dopamine, serotonin, cortisol, when that comes and minimizes those biological chemicals in the brain, that they can stop the post-traumatic stress from occurring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're in research. I was on 60 Minutes. They're in research with the vets about that. And they're trying to figure out, why does this happen? Is it the chemicals or, you know, like if you have low blood sugar, you know, you eat something and you address it through putting sugar in or taking sugar out. So they're thinking that something is going on biologically with chemicals and hormones mm-hmm. in the brain. And if they can make a change in that, then these flashbacks, if you hear that, we're under a storm, a thunder, won't happen. The chemicals, right. you know, that would normally, say, get kicked on, like you were in the event, which they know what those are, don't happen.
Yes.
So they're doing some of that research. They're trying to see if what you guys are going back through, that we'll call them flashbacks for a name,
right.
is that what's happening? When you think you've dealt with it and you have no mm-hmm. thing for a long time and then something happens and you're right there again. So that's
right.
kind of the latest what they're trying to figure out.
Okay.
Is that the cause?
Let me stop you guys right there really quickly. This is very, very interesting, but someone else has called in, and I wanted to make sure that somebody just popped a name in. So Laura out of Wisconsin, I believe, has joined as well. Good evening, Laura. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are everybody else?
Oh, I'm so glad you called in. Welcome to the show. We've got Dr. Deborah, who is our co-host, our professional tonight here on the question and answer. This is an open mic question and answer forum. And Dr. Deb was just telling us some of the technical ins and outs of PTSD and some of how some of the chemicals have our bodies reacting. So that's where we are now. Mm-hmm. And thank you for being here.
I
would like to say, Dr. Deb, you know, the cortisol, you know, that is something that, you know, the chemical that can create all kind of havoc, including the belly fat. But I think you're right. That is probably, if we could get our bodies to control somehow, you know, the amount of cortisol, then that's a big piece of it. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. What the cortisol is, it comes out of on top of your, like, they're like stress hormones. They're on top of your kidneys, okay? And they know that when people get under stress, this cortisol is released throughout their body. They know that. I'm not sure exactly what it does. That might be a good study. But I can tell you this, in places in China, some Chinese people believe that cortisol enhances sexual whatever. They will torture dogs to get the cortisol level in their system up and then do bad things to them to get the cortisol into them. So there's something with the cortisol. I hadn't done a real good study on it, but it is a hormone released. And if you live under chronic stress, even as a child or an adult or at work or whatever, your cortisol is constantly being released. And what will mm-hmm. happen is you eventually, those things on top of your kidneys get tired and weak. They have been releasing this cortisol, and you will get exhausted, and you just have no energy. And cortisol is like adrenaline. It is a hormone. Once it is kicked on by whatever thoughts or all the little genetic things, it takes a while for it to subside in the system. They know adrenaline, it does, if it gets turned on in a life and death situation, police go through this, domestic violence, it takes 36 hours for the adrenaline to come down and you return back to sort of a normal person where we can talk to you. And if you try to talk to somebody that's in that state where the adrenaline is high, there is no talking to them. And cortisol is sort of like that. It's
Go ahead. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. I
that
just wanted to see if anybody
people...
is. Go ahead. Yeah, that's a lot. It's an interest to me because I watched the TEDx with Dr. Amy Cuddy, who studies cortisol and, you know, can our bodies change our minds. So that completely got my attention. I do want to see, we've got Laura from, I believe, Wisconsin. We've got Janet from Tennessee, and we got Deborah from Arizona. And I want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to participate and ask you questions. And I will go ahead and repeat this one more time. You know, that Dr. Deb believes that we are a beating of spirit, soul, and physical body, and they all come together. And Dr. Deb also deals with the mentally ill patients, if I'm understanding correctly, trauma. You're very trauma informed, and a social worker. So you're a wealth of information for us to be able to ask questions to. So I want to open it up to Laura and Janet. Is there something that you'd like to ask Dr. Deb, either one of you?
Yes, I would like to make a couple comments, please. You could just call me by Darlene, Janet's my middle name, Darlene J, okay? I was one of them that was similar to her roommate. So traumatically, the sex abuse, the cult, everything. So I had developed dissociation myself. And my sons tell me that they still see some of the parts of me, so I haven't totally ever completely merged, but I'm living with it, if you know what I'm talking about. I was unwanted as a kid, you know, all the sex abuse and everything, all right, without going into too much detail there, okay? But I did not know about some of the flashbacks. I did not know some of my past. I've still got some big, dark blockages, right? It's like blackouts. Like, I don't know a lot of my life. And then some of the things, when it hit me after I married and after I had to have a hysterectomy, when a doctor did a surgery, after the surgery, you know, becoming my hospital room, you know, of course, after I had time to rest, recovery, and all that, and he came to my hospital room, and he asked me, had I ever been abused before? And I said, yes, but, you know, I shirked it off like a lot of people shirk it off today, you know? They go, oh, that's not important, you know, that's past, I'm dealing with it, you know, it's past. I'm not going to focus on that. Okay, you know, total denial. Well, if he said, well, he had never seen nobody messed up as internally as he saw me. And he said he was working on me 2 hours, and it was like none had been removed while he was trying to get removed scar tissue. He said, no matter what, you're going to need therapy. And I really thought he was full of it, okay? It was soon after that, and I'm thinking that he probably spawned off and sparked off, because it was soon after that that the flashbacks and the nightmares and everything started. Is that something that...
Doc, absolutely.
Well, he brought it
that's
to
something
my awareness,
that,
if you know what I mean.
Absolutely, and we hear that quite a bit. But I want to turn it over to Dr. Deb. Dr. Deb? Pastor Deb?
Do you want me to address that? Hello?
Yes, please.
Okay. What happens, do you want me to address the disassociation or the flashbacks or what?
Or about how, you know, how it goes into where you really have blockages of, you know, you block out a lot of the memories and some of them you might never, ever have when it's that traumatic.
Okay. One of the, like I said, one of the things that helped me, I never had this, was watching the Three Faces of Eve. Because she was a small girl, and she was just going to kiss Grandma goodbye so she wouldn't be sad. And they forced her to do it. That was so traumatic. She lost, she formed personalities. She had other ones, because she had other events. And what it took was a loving psychiatrist, and her willingness to be healed, but she couldn't be around her child for a long time. And the parts didn't really know what was going on. She had no memory of most of her life. And, you know, she was getting out of control, if you've ever seen the movie. But what it usually takes, it's a therapist, somebody that knows enough about this, that even if you can't pay and insurance won't pay, they're in there for the long haul. And a love bond starts happening where you on the inside, everybody feels safe. A lot of times I tell people I work with, you need to have a family meeting, and everybody needs to sort of talk about getting healed. The blackouts, it is a form of protection. It's built into our system of our soul and our body and our spirit for protection. Because when we're very young, some of this stuff, if we were not protected in many different ways, we would die. It would be too overwhelming for our little hearts and our minds to comprehend it. And so it's sort of, and mental health, people know, this was a form of defense mechanism to disassociate the what was going on from other parts of you, keep it locked away. Now, in the mental health world, they do believe that integration comes when you relive the event and you go back through it and you look at it and you accept it. Then other people believe that that's almost like raping you again, going back through it. And then some people believe, which I don't, that they go, well, where was God? And they say, well, let's go back through it. And this time, let's imagine God standing there while it's happening. And some therapists do that. Okay? So you will have a feeling that you were not alone. And so there's many different theories. What I've learned is if you have a good therapist, counselor, pastor, and they just love you, and they are there with you year in and year out, and they don't do charge you, and when you run out of insurance, they're still there. That's the environment where the healing can take place. And some of the parts, as you saw in Three Faces of Eve, they will give it up, but yet in hers, a new one was formed, Jane, the one she was probably always supposed to be when she grew up, but these events caused her to be fragmented, and sort of all of that got broken up. In the mental health world, they do believe that how you integrate that, everybody, Sybil shows you, you meet everybody, you embrace everybody, you take back into yourself what you have kept away from yourself, and you own all the ick. Other people don't believe that. So sometimes you have to ask your therapist, what their training was, what their school of thought, where are they trying to go. I've seen the integration. I have been with people that have worked with psychiatrists. And I'll get some, and then I've seen it done spiritually. I've seen them this where you will give up certain ones yourself, and sometimes it's your own protection. I worked with a young lady. She had a young guy named James, and she created him when she was about 3. And she had him all her life because that was her spiritual protection. But he was real tired because he had to be on call 24/7. And when I introduced her to Jesus, Jesus wanted to take that place. But she had to be willing to give up what she created to be her protection because she didn't know this guy. So we had to work through a lot of that. So sometimes it is your mechanism to protect yourself to survive. And your therapist and your counselors, they all go to different schools. They all believe different ways it should be done. Everybody has different theories and philosophies about how to heal you guys. They believe that the medical community believes it's chemical. It's, you know, the cortisol. It's the hormones. The mental health world, a lot of them believe we got to get your thinking straightened out. Okay, we got to give you some anger, man. Okay, so you need to be very knowledgeable of your therapist or your psychiatrist. What is their philosophy? You ask them questions. What do they believe? What were they taught? Some people, you know, believe we got to heal an inner child. John Bradshaw does. And there's a little inner child in there.
Yeah.
Okay. And then other people don't believe in that. If you go to a psychiatrist, he might just believe in it's just a chemical thing, and we just give you a medicine, and that should do it, and get a few little therapy to deal with your guilt and shame and be on about your life. Okay, I don't know.
Yeah. I agree with you on that aspect. Yes, ma'am. I agree with you on that aspect of finding a therapist that's competent, because there are some that are not qualified enough, even if they're supposedly got the degree. That's what helped me a good deal start wanting to fight and get better. It was somebody that cared, somebody that believed my story, somebody that, you know, had faith in me and believed me, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it took somebody like that. But then after I uncovered a lot and then I moved, I came upon a therapist who actually said, I wanted my daddy to be having sex with, had wanted him to have sex with me, that it didn't actually happen. I'm like, what?
Well, you know, I don't know if any of you know, but back in the 70s, a lot of people were coming forth with these memories of their parents. And they were accusing them of things that they said their parents said that sexually abused them. Well, the parents formed the false memory thing because they were getting, you know, going to court. So it becomes the child, even if you're an adult, versus the parents. And they tried to prove then that the therapist planted these ideas into you guys in therapy. And, you know, if you had hypnosis or they suggested that this happened, and then you just miraculously believed it, and then you sued your parents, then the parents get lawyers, and this was in the 70s and the 80s. And so a lot of people go, it didn't happen, they're not telling the truth. You know, they don't want to believe that leaders, fathers, they just had something on Dr. Oz today about church, Sunday school people. They don't want to believe this is happening.
What?
They don't want to believe that the little ones. So what happens to you guys is the lawyers line up on the other side and the parents, and well, they go against you, and they don't believe you.
Yep.
So it's a lot. You have to get a lot of good history, but right now, they're just now figuring out that as an adult, if something traumatic or toxic happened in your childhood, it could be why you're having problems as an adult. And they don't know what to do with it. They can't figure it out. They don't know why men will do this to little girls. They have no idea. They don't know. And they try. So whoever you are seeing for help, ask them, you know, what they believe about healing, what they believe their school of thought is, who are, because like that one therapist that said you wanted your dad, that's Freud. Okay?
Right.
Some of these people believe Freud's thoughts. Some people believe certain other people's thoughts. Some people, and when you go to school, there's many different books and different teachers that you get, and psychiatrists think differently. And so be careful. Ask a lot of questions. Study. Study whatever they've diagnosed you as. Look up the medicine. Mm-hmm. Look up the treatment. See what they, what they're trying to do. Be a knowledgeable patient, so to speak. And
so,
ask
Dr.
Zapp, questions.
So, Dr. Zapp, I just want to sit here and ask you a question real quick. You being acknowledged in the PTSD, what would be your first diagnosis for people who are out there with that? Because of me trying to explain that to other people, I've already been diagnosed. And when you try to explain PTSD dreams, it's kind of weird for them. They don't understand how to comprehend what I'm telling them. So how would you put that out there with all the differential that you're discussing right now?
Okay, and it was about PTS what?
PTSD dreams. Just
the
PTSD
dreams.
Yes.
Okay, the dreams. There's a lot of study, both spiritual about dreams and in the mental health world. A lot of people aren't real sure, you know, what a dream is, what is going on. They tell us in the mental health world where our brain is processing, cataloging things that's happened to us, and that it is something that is sort of being played out, trying to deal with it while we sleep. That's sort of a mental health discussion. They don't talk a lot in the mental health world about dreams. You can't put a dream on an X-ray machine. Can't see it under an MRI. You can't take your blood work and see what kind of dream you had. So dreams and what go on at nighttime with people, most of your mental health therapists, there's no classes in it. There's no classes in how to talk to you guys about their dreams. The best that they'll come up with, well, let's hypnotize you, and let's see if we can get to that subconscious and ask them what's going on. That's about the best they can do. In spiritual work, we do believe that the dreams is when your spirit is interacting with that world, and the conscious mind is not interfering with it. And what is happening in your dreams is happening to your spirit, which is still a part of your soul and your physical body. And in the spiritual arena, because we believe that is a world there that you don't see, it gets played out at nighttime. And a lot of them are very bad dreams, nasty. I don't like to talk too much about a lot of what goes on in it because it's not nice. And So most people who do dream work or sort of interpret your dreams mainly are in your, we'll call them the spiritual realm or world, because they kind of are more connected to that world. A mental health person, a psychiatrist, then they, I don't know. You know, it's the psychiatrist loves your body, your physical body. He's trying to figure out the balance, what's off, what chemicals, what do we need to add, do we need to take out, how do these hormones work.
How many deep breaths do you need to take? How many deep breaths? Let's take some deep breaths. And that's the kind of concept that you're coming to, correct?
Say again about taking a deep breath.
Taking a deep breath.
That happens. It is. And when it's yourself that's having these problems, and let's say you have a therapist or a psychiatrist, that they have not experienced this. It's like you're talking a foreign language to them and coming from a country they've never been to. And they don't know the language, the culture, nothing. And they're trying to help you, and they don't know. And a lot of it is book knowledge, and a lot of it is not personal knowledge. And they've read books or gone to things, and especially, too, if you're older and you get a young person that's just licensed, they may not even have been married, or they got young kids. They don't even understand, you know. And then they discovered in human trafficking, a lot of the therapists who are working with those people have unresolved sexual abuse issues themselves, but they didn't deal with them. So we have a big mess. But I like to tell people, get to know your therapist, your psychiatrist, ask them questions. If they diagnose you with something, please look it up, learn what they're talking about, look up the medication. There's a lot on Wikipedia out there. Study post-traumatic stress. Look at the research that they're doing biologically and become informed yourself.
Right.
And that
well,
does...
We had, that we, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. We did lose Laura, and I believe she's calling from Wisconsin. Hopefully she's still listening. And if you are, Laura, call back. Because if it's the same Laura that was on here a couple of weeks ago, we had a lady tell us a pretty interesting story where she is with the multiple personalities. What do you call it? DID? Or?
DID now. Uh-huh.
DID. And this person, I'm not sure if it's the same lady who called in today, but she told us a story where she went to her therapist, and this therapist asked her if she had been sexually abused as a child, and she said yes. And the therapist basically said, told her, how did you let this happen? You should have stopped it. And it sent, you know, our member, you know, in a spiral, you know, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, how dare her, you know, all of us were just furious when she shared this story. And, you know, this is someone with, dealing with DID that needs, you know, help. However, to have someone say, how did you let that happen? That's your fault, basically, will send, you know, our survivors into a, you know, it'll send them into a spiral, you know, centuries back, you know, and it's dangerous. So if there's anyone who is listening, you know, Pastor Deborah is giving the same advice that we give here at NASCA. Is, you know your therapist, and if they're giving you advice, question, you have to have somebody you're comfortable with. And I loved what you said, you know, if it's somebody that's in for the long haul, whether you can pay them or not, you know, because we all have ups and downs, you know, someone that's more focused on helping you is wonderful. And if that therapist is telling you something that's detrimental, go to a different one. Find someone else. You know, that's not the one for
and
you.
And also, one of the things that you have a right as a patient or a client, if you feel that therapist broke ethical and professional boundaries by saying that, they need to be reported. I have had to report them. They have had, I've had psychologists impregnate their clients, and they have to get reported. It goes on. That is, why do they believe that? I don't know. It's not taught in the books that they read, other than Freud believed that there was a lot of unresolved sexual issues between parents and children, and that is why, and he believed that that's what was causing the problems. But your job as a client, it would be like if you had a biological doctor, you report them to the ethics, to that licensing of that state for ethical misconduct. There are powerful lines they cannot cross, and they have to be reported. And so when somebody says that to you, that is totally unethical and unprofessional. And yes, then you go get yourself another therapist. And sometimes, I don't know why they do it, they got problems themselves.
I know that when I first started therapy, insurance did not cover it. And, of course, where I go to church, the pastor would not, see me or whatever. But the elder ended up paying somebody to see me, and he would actually lock the door, and he would keep the key until he was ready for me to leave. And then even if he went to the bathroom, I had to go in the bathroom with him. And then before we left, we would have to, I would have to sit in his lap and he'd tell me what happened. So I know where that other girl that's got DID like I do, I know where she's coming from,
Mm-hmm. What happens, I can tell you a couple things about pastors. They have problems and issues themselves. And a lot of them need to be out of the pulpit. Now, what happens is also the pastors are not trained in any of this. They don't know what to do. And they really do more harm unless they have a lot of mental health training. But when you have somebody that locks the doors and does that, you should never go back to them. And you should report them to their professional ethics board for malpractice. Every professional, I don't care if you're a fireman, police officer, a school teacher, there's rules. We are in positions of authority. And you violate those, you have to be reported. And there's ethics and there's professions and there's boundaries, and they get broke all the time and with vulnerable people. And it's a power. So you've got to watch out for yourself, okay?
Right. I didn't have a driver's license, and my husband drove me. And he would say, he said that he had to do some things that's not right for a therapist to do to get you better. And he would force me to go every time. He would drive me up there, wait in the car while I had to be seen,
A lot of that, if it's with a pastor, is that's what they think is their due diligence. And the pastor, deep inside, will say the husband, he wanted the pastor to fix you. Okay, he wanted to get this fixed because it's embarrassing for people. But he probably didn't know much about the pastor. And pastors, we're counselors, are trained. You do not lock the doors. You don't close the doors. Okay, if you have an opposite sex person in there, the door stays cracked. They need to live that people are recording everything they're saying, that there's video cameras in there, and that you're going to end up in the court. But most therapists don't do that. They close their door. They say it's for your protection and confidentiality. But you know how much stuff is happening behind closed doors? And they tell you it's for your good. I've had to live my whole life, I'm going to court. I got video cameras on me. Every word, every text, everything is recorded. That was the only way I could make sure that I knew what I did as I have been falsely accused of things. And if I hadn't had witnesses and my character, okay, and the person who filed the charges was accusing everybody. So I lived a different kind of life where most therapists, that's their world behind that closed door. Even if it's female right. to female or male to male. And even in the church, I can go and hold hands in a prayer group and I can sexually assault you with my hands. And I can give you indications holding your hands in a prayer group. In the jail, when we have Bible studies, it's not hard to do, okay? And a lot of your predators and unethical people know that. And they look at people with problems as very vulnerable, and they take advantage of you. And you
right.
have to be a little bit, you have to be smart, educated. You have to check your therapist out, their school of thought, what they believe. Okay? Like if you were an older lady and you go to a young girl, never been married, never had any kids, I don't know much that she would know about life. And a lot of times we go to a man pastor when we've been abused by a man. That ain't going to work. Okay? It's just not going to help.
Right.
So the clients, I call them clients, patients, whatever, we're just trying to find help. And we are so innocent, we think these people in these wonderful positions love us and help us, and it just don't work out. And sometimes the only thing you can do is report them to their ethical professions and report
right.
unethical behavior. And move on. And then get out
right.
on Facebook and tell everybody, don't go to that one. Okay?
Well, I like what you said. Okay, hold on. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you guys off. I liked what Pastor Deb said about, you know, your husband, because men sometimes, they just want to fix us. So, you know, he probably, I would guess, had good intentions and didn't understand, you know, that this guy had broken, you know, boundaries with you. You know, sometimes it takes a third perspective, because I think a lot of times we think, well, they're a person of God, and, you know, and I'm a religious person. I'm a faith, you know, a spiritual type person. But a lot of times we just think that the pastor, you know, that they're doing God's work, so it's okay. But it's not, you know, if someone is locking the door or making you sit in their lap, you know, whether it's a pastor or a gynecologist or you
uh-huh.
know, a therapist, I agree
that.
With you. I mean, that, you know, there are boundaries. And it's what's even worse is these are people who are of authority, and we look to them for guidance, and we're all, you know, we're going to them for help because we're broken in some capacity in our lives, particularly with survivors of child abuse or domestic violence. You know, we're you know, I think Janet said, you know, when she was younger, she felt unwanted, which I understand that feeling. You know, and endured abuse, which I understand those feelings, you know, because I lived them as well. And then, you know, you try to go to somebody for guidance, and they make you sit in their lap or go to the bathroom with them. So, you know, I just, shame on them. I don't know what else to say. I'm sure there was good intentions. That's, you know, what works for some doesn't work for other. And Pastor Deborah, I think that you hit on that just a little bit. You know, what works for one may not work for the other, you know, whether it's a group like this, or whether it's a therapist, or whether it is, you know, speaking to someone you trust, or it could be a pastor. You could find a pastor that helps. But what I would like to encourage anyone who's listening and anyone on this panel is to just, you know, keep trying. And if that doesn't work for you, go on to something else, another person or another venue. Here at NASCA, you know, if you go to www.nasca.org, we've got a wealth of tools and resources to help folks. And so that's kind of that. Janet, my prayers are going out to you, sweetie. I hope you know, I'm glad you've called in, and I hope that you have found, you know, a different, you know, another support system. So
yeah, I found out that psychiatrist who helped me, and then he wanted me to turn the guy in, but I never would because my husband didn't want me to. But my husband was being abusive to me as well, so but anyway. But I was wondering about one other thing. I know that we talked about PTSD, and I know PTSD and anxiety basically go hand in hand. And then another thing, another term that I had was agoraphobia. Can you touch base on agoraphobia a little bit?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to touch on anxiety. I don't like that word. For anxiety is fear of death, period. Anxiety means you're fearful. And coming from a spiritual standpoint, that is the bondage. We are all afraid of death. That's what anxiety means. But mental health doesn't want to say that word, or, you know, fear of death, but that's what it means. Agoraphobia, the phobia part, that part of the word, learn to break out words, means fear. Fear of what? Death. Is agoraphobia, is that spiders? Is that what the agro part is?
No, I was fearful of being in public places around a lot of other people and all that.
Okay. All right. What that is it's basically a foundational fear. If I go out there, if they learn the truth about me, if I do anything that will embarrass anybody, I will die. I have been told that. I will be killed. So somewhere, you know, us little kids, when we were little, we heard, if you don't do this, I'll kill you. If you do that, you'll kill me. Okay? Death. So when we're little, whether our parents or family members knew it or not, they were training us. That's what the Bible talks about. You train a child the way you want them to go when they grow up. We all get that fear implanted, but it is, if you notice, the flight or fight syndrome, the cortisol, is a natural thing to survive. A situation comes, I either have to run away to live and be safe, or I have to fight and put the fire out. One or two. I got the cortisol, the sugar, I'm going to do one or the other. Because I have interpreted a situation as fearful and deadly. So anytime you see the word phobia, it means fear of death. And then you can put anything in front of it, and there's association, okay, over your childhood probably. You would go out in public with family members, and you would get a look. A nonverbal a hand squeeze. Or mama or somebody would say, now when we go out, you better not say nothing, or you know what'll happen. So we go out. But we're under that fear of something bad happening. So we develop memories, bonds, conditioning through words or accompanied by maybe actions. That if you go out in public and you expose what's going on at home and you say anything, you did. Somebody told us that, or we were told, when you're out there, you be silent. Maybe when we were two or three, or we got that look. Okay. Or something. So we developed a habitual habit, a conditioning, okay, of fear of people. And what that does is it keeps you isolated from talking, from having close relationships, bonding with anybody, except we'll say the word perpetrators. You are too afraid to get close to anybody that maybe could rescue you or heal you or shed a light, so they keep it. It's sort of like in human trafficking. You got groomed as a child without you even mm-hmm. knowing it. And you get out and grow up. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, it may, you know, I think what you're saying makes sense, because I'm a very outgoing person. I'm an extrovert. But I did endure child abuse as a young child and went straight into a domestic violence situation. And I think you've hit the nail on the head, because a lot of times they want us isolated, particularly with my ex-husband, you know, because that was that control. So, you know, part of his control was he isolated me from friends and family. You know, I had no one around me, and I couldn't trust anyone. And I remember, you know, in my 20s, you know, having the anxiety, because you're dumb, you're stupid, you're worthless, you're broken, you know, you're broken luggage, you know, put down, put down, put down, put down. So, you know, my self-esteem was so low. So when I got out there and I interacted with people, I felt like an idiot, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, and those are some of the esteem issues that I still have, you know, that I fight. It's not like it was back then. But, you know, when people tell you you're an idiot, you're dumb, you're worthless, you're stupid, you know, you're broken, mm-hmm. you're luggage, you know, luggage that no one wants, and then you get out there and interact with normal people, you feel like an idiot. So then you dread it, and then go mm-hmm. ahead.
There's bigger goals going on with control than you realize.
Mm-hmm.
In order to keep control over the situation, your thoughts, your feelings, where they feel like they will groom you and condition you through words and behaviors. So when you do go out in public, you say nothing. You will look at somebody like me, and if I'm not spiritually in tune and to hear your little spirit and inner child talking to me and telling me what's going on, I have to look at you and know what is really happening without you saying a word. Now, that's spiritual work. But you are groomed to be out in society and say nothing and to feel a certain way and to always sort of return home. And if you try to step outside of that to freedom, healing, that you are somebody, all that conditioning and fear rises up, because that's the bond, that's the conditioning, the mental conditioning. You hear it in cults. Okay, why don't you leave the cult? Okay, because they're conditioned not to leave, but they're conditioned they can go out in public. But you say nothing. And that gets started very early in all of our lives. And so you almost have brainwashing. Okay? You hear that a lot, that needs to be cleaned up. And that fear of somebody exposing something, and then the shame that goes with feeling that bad. Okay? That nobody would love me makes it worse. But let me tell you, I'm going to give you some. Every one of you has spoken. You've talked nonverbally. You have told the world without saying one word. You'll look at somebody, a pastor, somebody, with your eyes, and you would plead for help, and they just didn't hear you. Because there's a lot of nonverbal, because a lot of your people in your heavy metal music, they talk all the time. Your clothes talk, your hair talks, your jewelry talks, your hands talk, your pleading eyes talk. But if you're not in tune to that language, okay, and know that, can't hear you. But some of us are trained to hear that. And I've been around people, it's like, I can't tell you anything, but can you help me? But I can't tell you a thing, but I'm just looking at you with my eyes. And that's all I got.
Or
I write a poem or a song, and I'm speaking, but nobody's listening. And that's some of the frustrations for the people. And they try to get it out through artwork, poems. When I see purple hair, they're talking to me. Green hair, talking to me. Everything's talking. It's just that a lot of your therapists, they have to have you open your mouth and tell your story. I don't do that with people. I go, I don't need to hear all your stuff. We're not going to relive it. We don't need to. We need to get over it and get done. This one psychiatrist, he would never hypnotize anybody. He said, if I hypnotized you and had you relive your events, I'm re-raping you again. I won't do that. Well, there's other therapists that will hypnotize you. So you have to be very careful who you trust your life, your brokenness, your stories to, and who is going to have some good training. So do some research on your therapists and your support groups, you know. And
that's one of the that's one of the things that we have, and I know we've got some resources on the NASCA site, and we've, you know, some of the things that we discuss as a group is, you know, to train folks, you know, how to react when someone does share something like abuse. The first person whom I told as a young adult, you know, I thought it was going to be somebody I could trust. It was somebody who was, you know, in the church. It was actually my sister-in-law, and the way she reacted totally surprised me. Oh my God! And then she acted like I was a leper, you know, that I had a scarlet letter. She distanced herself from me, and it was devastating. I didn't tell anybody for a while because, you know, I was embarrassed, and you know, there was no empathy, there was no compassion. And this was somebody that was very, very, you know, a church, you know, a Bible-thumping churchgoer. So I was shocked. A lot of times, you know, we've heard folks who have come on the show that say even therapists, oh, my God, you know, just the story I told, how did you let that happen? Where, you know, if someone shares their story, and we do encourage folks to share what they're comfortable sharing, you know, so we don't, like you said, Pastor Deb, we don't want to re-rape them. But, you know, we also sometimes getting the story out, what they are comfortable sharing helps. And it's an honor, you know, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for trusting me with that information and to help folks understand, you know, how to respond when somebody comes to you, because that is somebody reaching out. You know, one of the things that I'm a firm believer is until we get that validation, because we've been silenced for so long, don't tell, don't tell, don't tell. You know, you'll catch on fire, you'll die, I'll kill your dog, you know, whatever the case may be, whatever tools they'll use to keep them silent. So when someone does come out and tell what happened to them, you know, they're looking for validation. To me, that's a huge step. You know, thank you for sharing that. You did nothing wrong. You didn't deserve that. That was 100% not your fault. I'm sorry you went through that. What can I do to help you heal? You know, those are the kind of things that I look for. And I know that, you know, we promote here at NASCA and as a survivor community to support folks, you know, in their healing journey. So I hope that helps, you know, this panel and anybody who's listening. Pastor Deb, and you know, what are your thoughts on that?
You guys ought to be sitting in with some transgender people. They have the same feelings about coming out to their families and to people, and they battle exactly the same thing. The fear, and they don't know who to trust. And that's one thing I have learned being on both sides, mental health and spiritual. You can't trust everybody. Not everybody is trained. Some people have their specialties. And a lot of it's just book knowledge. It's not, or they'll go to a few conferences. Okay? But it's, I have seen integration. I have seen deliverance work. I have seen God do some powerful stuff. I've seen people get healed instantaneously. I've seen people do, you know, and I've seen mental health. This one book I read years ago, psychiatrist working with a young lady who had DID, and she ran out of insurance money, and most of the psychiatrists quit seeing her, but this one didn't. And he stayed with her for years, and she started healing. And I prayed to God, and I said, what's going on? He didn't pray, didn't talk about God. He said he loved her as a human being. And in that environment of love, that he was not doing it for money, I can work. I will do the work because he loved her as a human being. And I learned a great, when you have a therapist or a person in your life that is there with you, charges you nothing, and hangs in there with you, healing will occur. And that's the thing most of the, I tell people in the mental health, when they leave the crisis unit, therapists do not go home with you. You cannot call them at 2 o'clock in the morning when you feel like you're being in a dream and being raped. They aren't going to answer. Psychiatrist is not going to answer. But a good friend, a good pastor, we on call 24/7. And for a lot of people, they need a good therapist, some great ones. They have good conflict resolution, anger management, help you to think. Sometimes you need to be on medication. Maybe some of you had head injuries, you know, in domestic violence, and the brain's been hurt and damaged and need healing. And sometimes all the body chemistries are all messed up, okay? And we need to get that all right. So all three parts need to be with qualified people and doing what they say and working in all three areas to heal every part. If you just do the biological, well, that won't help the emotional. If you just do the emotional, that doesn't help the spiritual. So that's kind of how I've always been, is that all three parts have all been abused. And they all three need healing. And each part, like a spirit, can be angry. It can feel devalued, not loved, just like the soul part of you. And the physical body, a lot of people says it has memories. It does, because we have memories in our brain. And it's right. A very complex, so you want qualified people working with your physical body, understanding you, a qualified and trusting therapist, and you can have that, and a good friend, if you find just a next-door neighbor or somebody online, okay, that just listens to you and let you cry, or will read your poems that you write. You need a lot of people in there helping
you. A good support system. And, you know, one thing that, you know, and that's one thing I'd like to say is, you know, if you have, like the example I gave, if you reached out to somebody and they're not, you know, healthy for your support system, you don't have to cut them out of your life, just you have to cut them out of your support system. You know, thanks but no thanks, you know. And I had to learn that with my sister-in-law as well. You know, and of course she's not in my life anymore, but, you know, I had to distance myself, and I knew that that was something I would never talk to her about. You know, and, you know, at the time, you know, I'm looking at, you know, when I was in my 20s, you know, what I would say to her now, you know, being in my mid-50s, you know, how I would have handled it differently. But I'm not at the same place that I was. You know, I'm educated, you know, in the survivor spectrum, and I, you know, understand things that I didn't understand when I first reached out to her. So, you know, anyone, if you've reached out to somebody and it seems negative or, you know, negative vibes, move on to somebody else. There are folks out there who, you know, who will understand. You know, the NASCA, whether it's another NASCA member, you know, in our Facebook, we have a closed Facebook. We've got an open one, or, you know, anyone in our, you know, on our calling list. I would encourage you guys, to anyone listening, to call in. We've got about 10 minutes. Deborah dropped off about 20 minutes ago, and we did lose Laura. So if you guys are still listening, please call back. We still have 10 minutes. Bobby from Florida has joined us. Bobby's been listening to the show for probably about 35 minutes. So, Bobby, I wanted to welcome Bobby. Bobby Hyde from Miami, Florida. Good evening, Bobby. How are you? Bobby might be just listening. He does sometimes. Bobby, your mic is open, so you know, feel free to jump in when you need to. We still have Janet from Tennessee, and I'm Tammy from Pompano, and we've got Pastor Deborah. You're calling in from Pensacola, Florida. So we've got three Floridians in here. So that's pretty cool. I'm down in Bobby and I are down in South Florida. Bobby's in Miami, and I'm just a little bit north in Pompano. But, you know, one thing I wanted to pop back to the dream. We had talked about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had a friend who I worked with years ago, and she ended up, she came to me in my dream. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. And she was a transvestite. And Miss Betty, and she worked for me, long story. And then, you know, after I left Sears, you know, her and I stayed in contact. I just adored her. And one night I had a dream, and Miss Betty came to me and said, "Tammy, I just wanted to say bye." And I said, "Where are you going, Miss Betty?" She says, "I'm going." I said, "Well, I'm going to come with you." And she said, "No, you can't come with me." And I popped up out of bed. It was like 1:33 in the morning, because I remember popping up, looking at the clock, it was 1:33. And the next day I found out Miss Betty had died, and one of my associates called me up and said, "I just wanted," because they knew we were close, and said, "I just wanted to let you know that, you know, Miss Betty died yesterday, and, you know, she was stabbed to death." And I said, "What time did she die?" "Oh, about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning." I got chills on down my spine. So I'm a firm believer that folks do, you know, communicate with us, you know, in our dreams. So that's just, you know, that's just a personal thought. You know, we can discover a lot in our dreams, you know, sometimes if we pay attention, whether it's, you know, the scenario I just had, or, you know, if we have flashbacks, you know, I don't know that they can be controlled, but, you know, dreams are powerful, you know, in a healing process or just day-to-day life. Just, you got any quick thoughts on that, Pastor Deborah?
A lot of people, dreams are when, like I said, it's when your spirit is a sort of awake and your conscious mind, and it's not interfering, and that world becomes real to you, and it is real. Flashbacks in your dreams, in that realm, it's not your spirit doing it. It's other things that are trying to torment, frighten, abuse the spirit to keep it in, locked in that framework of fear. And so those nightmares or those flashbacks, since they're controlled by other things, and it's sort of like we're going to program you and some more. And people, it is a very busy world realm. People are moving in it all the time. And people, like your friend Betty, her spirit was saying she knew she was going to die. And she probably knew she had done something. Usually when that happens, they usually accept Christ and they're going to be killed. And they wanted to let you know, because their spirit was going to let you know. It's a whole world just like we have here. A lot of people do interpret the dreams. Sometimes you do get spiritual messages in pictures and dreams, because you're not quite, do not interpret them. But so a lot of people do interpret dreams, and it's sort of depending on what your spiritual education is and what you believe about dreams and things like that. Now, therapists, there are no classes, no books. When you're getting your master's, your PhD, or your psychiatry about dreams. And so they don't have that. So if you tell somebody, "I feel like I'm being raped in the middle of the night, and people coming in my room, and they're raping me," and I'm leaving my body and they're taking me somewhere, they would think you were long on medication. Now, if that's happening to them, they're not going to admit it. So it's one of those worlds that it can be kind of weird, and some people make it that way, and they make it kind of spooky. And but your mental health therapists and clinicians, I'll tell you, probably 100% of them move in that world. They're just not going to tell you. But if you mention it, or you hear, like, if Betty came to you, like if you were awake, they would be saying you were hearing voices. And you'd go, well, it's Betty. Yeah, but you're hearing voices inside of you. And that, okay, because if, so I have to be very alert that everybody moves, everybody's in it, but they don't talk about it because they don't want that label of, you are hallucinating. I had this one pastor, I listened to him, he said, if you hear the voice of God inside of you, you're mentally ill. God doesn't do that anymore. And you are hallucinating and delusional, and you need to be on medication. You're crazy. And I heard this one guy say, well, I must be crazy because I hear God's voice. So a lot of people, that's where they are. And so you don't want to be around those kind of people, pastors or therapists, because that ain't going to help you heal. So do your research on the do your research. Find out where they went to school. Okay? Our social workers believe something different than mental health counselors. Psychiatrists believe something different than psychologists. They all come from different foundations and different beliefs.
Right.
And you need to know that so you'll know where they're going to ask your questions, how they're going to get you there, what they believe about what you're saying, whether it's real or not, or what. Be an informed patient.
Right. Well, we're just about out of time. We've only got a couple of minutes left, so I need to wrap it up. I wanted to open it up to Janet in Tennessee and see if she's got, you know, some final thoughts or, you know, a final question. We've only got about a minute left, or maybe just a final thought. Janet in Tennessee?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I appreciate you being here, Pastor Deb. And thank you for the fortitude to strive and helping other people that's been abused as well, and believing in them, believing in people like us, you know, to want to help when they might not have any other choice for help as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to commend you for that, and I really enjoyed learning more about it. Of the different PTSD facts, you know, with the so I appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Janet from Tennessee. Thanks for calling in. I really appreciate the support, and I think it's been a great show. It's been very informative. Laura, we did lose Laura early on. Laura, thank you for calling in. Hopefully you're still listening. You're always welcome. Janet, you're always welcome. Bobby's here. Bobby's listening. Thank you for calling in, Bobby Hot in Florida. We did lose Deborah about 30 minutes ago. She was my co-host, so I'm sure something came up. But Deborah, thank you for calling in as well. I just got the 90-second mark. Pastor Deborah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. It's been very informative. I really appreciate you being here with us tonight.
I enjoyed it. I'll be back next month on the fourth Tuesday of August, I think.
The fourth Tuesday in August. Absolutely wonderful. I know I'm running out of time. I did want to tell everyone that we have a special guest tomorrow night, Suzanne Alden. She's a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and she runs SAAN. So that is a special guest. It will not be an open mic, but there will be an opportunity for interaction. So please call in and support Suzanne. So thank you very much, everybody. At this point, I'm going to close the show and say God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Thank you, Pastor Deborah. Thank you, Janet. And thank you, Bobby Hyde. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Talk Radio.